afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet and I'm here in the studio with Ron Landis. The late Patty Fink is going to be very late this week. She'll be here next week. Our guests this week are Sean Baugh, who's the artistic director of the Turtle Creek Corral, and Bruce Jester, who's the executive director of the Turtle Creek Corral. Laurent Landis is sitting on that side of the table with them. He is the executive nothing of the Lambda Weekly Show. So welcome, everybody.
Hello, David.
Good afternoon. Good to be here.
You have a lot coming up right now. Your season starts soon. Your season is called Renegade. Tell us a little bit about Renegade. How did you come up with it? What is Renegade? What can we expect? We only have an hour.
Doesn't it sound edgy?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's supposed to be. And Renegade is all about the individual making a difference in the world. So being a renegade, breaking the rules, trying something new. So that's what we went with this season.
And what does that mean? What types of things did you start thinking about? And I know the way you start your season, you start with this broad idea, and then you break it down into your concerts?
So believe it or not, I actually start with the concerts, and then we come up with a general concept around this concert. So the first one that came up was the concert, the series that starts next week, Snowflakes, yes, political pun completely intended. And the idea of the individual came out of that. We have a concert about country music and cowboys, you know, obviously individuals, and called Outlaws, and then a social music concert called Anthems. So everything really centering around individuals to make change in the world.
Okay, so I'm doing something I'm completely unqualified for. Once a month, I fill in on the Jewish Music Hour. So for me, doing a music show, I shouldn't be doing that, but I am. So I'll do things like there was an earthquake and I played Carole King's I Feel the Earth Move Under My Feet. Totally offensive.
And by the way, he's not joking.
I'm not joking. I'm not surprised.
Of course I'm not. Or I'll follow a religious song about Abraham and Isaac and then Jacob and his two wives. I followed that with David Lee Roth's Just a Gigolo.
Yeah.
I just thought.
But I'm guessing the Renegade will not be quite like that.
I don't think I'm going to lose my job.
Okay. See,
that's the difference between a paid individual and volunteer.
But when you're putting your music together, and one thing I do like to do is put together a couple of things that just relate to each other. And off the top of my head, I can't think of a good example. There were two mambos that were both Jewish. Mambo Italiano, I think, was sung by Bette Midler, and another mambo something. Oh, from West Side Story.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So I played those together. And it was just kind of a fun juxtaposition. And I know you do that kind of thing, mm-hmm. but you do it professionally. How do you start putting your shows together?
So I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Everybody mm-hmm. seems to think that you choose a theme and then you pick a bunch of music that belongs specifically mm-hmm. to that theme. Well, that's actually not the case.
Sure.
I sit down and I find pieces and songs that I like, and then I cram it into the theme the best that I can. Mm-hmm. And if something just won't cram, well, then maybe that's not the best piece to do. But mm-hmm. I found if you kind of establish a really broad theme, a lot of music can really fit in that theme. And so it's really, honestly, without, I don't want to give away any secrets and I don't want to give away the magic, but I just program stuff that I like. And then hopefully it works out, you know, in placement.
So this wasn't totally a response to, I guess, the current political climate?
The name was. Yeah, definitely the title of the concert.
What's wrong with our political climate?
Nothing at all.
Oh, okay. It's a little
perfectly
sunshine.
Normal.
That's what they're for.
Yeah, yeah. So we're having a little fun with it on Snowflakes, at least.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Snowflakes being unique and always individual, so we're celebrating the power of the individual mm-hmm. and that person. So that's the lofty theme of the concert.
So you've been director of the Corral now, what, 4 years?
This is my fourth season.
Fourth season. And the Corral has been getting stronger and stronger since you started.
It's a miracle, grown, right? You can believe it.
I can believe it. But you and Bruce, this is your third season?
I'm right at my third year as executive director.
So the chorale's been getting stronger, and you'd never directed anything like this before. You were the director of the Cathedral of Hope. What is it called?
The orchestra. And
okay.
Yeah. So
which is a nice size, but not this gigantic size.
Yeah, this is my first big chorus. Like, what a way to start, huh?
That's great. And it is one of the largest choruses in the world, in the country.
Yeah. And likely in the world.
And yeah, okay.
You don't see many choruses in the world over 200 singers, so it's maybe right. A chorus isn't a good word. It's this giant mass of people singing.
So I'm getting back to what we were talking about. Your concerts have been getting better and better and stronger, and you as a director, obviously you learn the job as you're
right,
doing it.
Right.
Do you find you have more confidence in just one of those songs that you said that you really enjoy and it's just not coming across the way you wanted it and you said, we're throwing it out, or have you gotten better at, I know what was wrong with it that first season that I was doing it, and now had I been doing that, we would have gotten it on.
It doesn't really happen, David. Every choice I make is the right one, and I never deviate from that at all.
I see. Okay. you should see the look that Bruce just gave.
Right. I'll tell you what, the singers kind of have a running joke amongst them that who knows what Sean's going to cut or add next. Because, you know, like any type of art, it's a process. And I can sit down with a sheet of paper and my computer and come up with a program that I think really works, and you start singing it and it just doesn't make sense, and so you either have to make some big decisions, move some things around, cut things altogether. I have actually changed the course of an entire concert theme mid-rehearsal before. Mm-hmm. Just because it wasn't feeling right. So if you go with your heart, again, if that ever happened to me, it doesn't. Everything I do works.
It works.
Yes.
Okay.
But if you go with your heart,
Bruce is the chorale listening today.
There, everything that he does eventually does work. Yes. However, there hasn't been a concert that I know of that hasn't had evolution along the way, mm-hmm. and it's always for the better. Mm-hmm. And that's just the natural process of things. I don't think that's unique to the Turtle Creek Chorale or anywhere else. But as long as the end product turns out as good as it possibly can be, that's what you need to do, and that's mm-hmm. what Sean does.
Mm-hmm. You have some members that have been members of the chorale for years. Mm-hmm. Do they have any input in the song selection?
They think they do. No, they do. They recommend. And actually, I just published an article about working with adults. And one of the insights of the article and something that surprised me over the years was that oftentimes your singers know more about repertoire and program than you do. Like, for example, we have a country music concert coming up. I don't know diddly squat about country music, even though I'm from Oklahoma. And so I have an inbox full of ideas and repertoire suggestions that the members send in. And you know what? Occasionally I'll use them, and they get really excited when I do. So many, many times I have found that something a member has brought to me that I've been hesitant to use has ended up being a really popular piece and one of the favorites on the program.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell them that, though. Tell them
they're not listening.
I would never tell them that. And they better be listening.
Well, Sean, tell us a little bit about your background. You were at the Cathedral of Hope before,
sure.
But were you a singer there? Or?
Well, so I actually joined the chorus 11 years ago. And I studied music going through school. I got my master's degree in the Meadow School of the Arts at SMU here. Oh. I was going to be an orchestra / band conductor. But when I got out of grad school, I was pretty much done with music. And instead, I went into marketing and design, which is kind of another love that I had. And I know this is 1996, no, 2006, sorry, 2006, a friend of mine called me and said, hey, let's go sing with the Turtle Creek Chorale. They were doing this really important song suite called When We No Longer Touch, which I had grown to love.
Oh, don't start with that one.
I know. And it was the...
and I'll tell... Why?
Yeah.
Few minutes.
It was a major anniversary for the piece. We were doing it again. It was Tim Seelig's last year as artistic director. Mm-hmm. So I said, all right, I'm going to come sing one concert, and then I'm done. I don't have the time, and I'm out of music. This isn't what I want. So I sang in one concert. Well, here we are. And
So the music bit you again.
It did, and the whole experience really changed my life right there. So I sang, you know, for however many years that is before I ever started to step into a musical role with the organization.
Well, you stepped into a musical role also as an associate conductor.
Right, but before all that, there was an opening at Cathedral Hope to lead the music on Sunday mornings, and I was feeling the hankering to get back into music. And so I started at Cathedral Hope full-time and left my very comfortable full-time marketing job and went into church music, you know, one of the highest and most lucrative paid.
They didn't care that you were Jewish?
I'm sorry?
They didn't care that you were Jewish?
Well, I had to change my faith.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I thought I should have let you know that.
So
that started it all. And then from there, I transitioned into an associate conductor position with the chorale. And then when the opening came, into the full-time AD.
Awesome.
Okay, so the story with When We No Longer Touch.
Mm-hmm.
I was married on stage at a Turtle Creek Chorale concert a year and a half ago. And 9 months later, Brian passed away. And members of the chorale came to the funeral and sang a piece from that. And it was gorgeous.
It was.
Then, how many months later was it that the Transgender Chorus of L.A. was here, and...
That was in September.
That was in September?
Yeah.
That was just September?
Yeah, first part of September.
Yeah, August.
So we're over at the at Cathedral of Hope, and the chorale is doing a 24-hour singing marathon, and I happened to be there for one part of it, and they sang that song. And I'm in tears. And Sean said, yeah, we started that one, and I thought that might have gone bad. So I just walked up on stage, gave Sean a hug. I didn't care that, you know, middle of the concert, they'd already been performing for about 20 hours, and they were just exhausted. So I just gave Sean a hug, and I explained to everybody the story.
I mean, is there anything bigger than the power of music in a situation like that?
You know? Absolutely.
Right. It really was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
It just tell what that piece is, though.
Sure. When We No Longer Touch was a song cycle based on the cycles of grief. And it was premiered and sung at a time that not a lot of people were talking about AIDS. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of ravishing our community. And so the chorale came out as healer and pastor and rabbi in that moment, especially with the song cycle. And it remains to this day probably one of the most important things the chorale has ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most gorgeous pieces of music the chorale has ever performed, for sure. And we still perform moments from that at pretty much every memorial service that we sing.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime we need to remember somebody, we pull out that piece. Yeah. It's an important piece to us.
It is, and it's just gorgeous. And all you have to do now is mention it, and I'm like,
little tidbits of background on that particular song cycle.
Mm-hmm.
There's a gentleman by the name of Chris Anthony, who was composer in residence for the chorale at that time, and he was diagnosed with HIV/AIDS and knew that he didn't have long to be around. He was essentially Tim Selig's taste meter. Mm-hmm. He kept Tim Selig from going over the edge on some of his programming and skit choices and such as that. And at
kind
one
of
point,
the opposite to me, because if I was there doing that, I would be pushing
you
Sean.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have one. It's pretty obvious.
He has no taste meter because everything is self-contained and it works. Tim and Chris were talking about this kind of thing, and Chris said, I have a song cycle in me, and it deals with this, and it's going to be based on the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Seven Stages. Mm-hmm. And things all fell together. Tim announced it as coming up and hinted at a premiere date, and suddenly Chris realized he better get started.
Mm-hmm.
It was not something that was done over a period of years. It's something that was done over a period of weeks. And it's an absolute masterpiece.
Well, it was so inspired. Such an inspired piece. AIDS really was something that drove the chorale. Not quite from the beginning. The chorale was formed before the AIDS crisis, but it's something that affected the chorale for years. Bruce,
still
you were
does.
In, and still does, but Bruce, yeah. you were in the chorale at the height of the AIDS crisis.
Yes.
Talk about that just a little bit. We need to take a break in just a minute, but and we'll continue this afterwards.
Yeah,
look, should we take the break? Why don't we take our break right now, and we'll talk about that afterwards, because it's part of how the chorale is going to be moving forward, too. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis. Patty Fink has the week off. Our guests are Sean Baugh and Bruce Jaster from the Turtle Creek Chorale, and we'll be back with more right after this.
This is Jake Winters from Leicester, England, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on KNON 89.3 FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis, and our guests are Sean Baugh and Bruce Jaster from the Turtle Creek Chorale. Sean is the artistic director. Bruce is a former business partner of mine.
True.
Bruce and I have known each other since like the 1980s. When we had a travel agency together. But that was before I was on KNON even.
You have known him a long time.
So we're talking a little bit about the chorale started in 1980.
Yes.
That's before AIDS hit.
Yes.
But AIDS did hit in Dallas about 1983-84, and it hit hard.
It all of the AIDS crisis began to escalate in that 82-83-84 time frame. And the feeling in the chorale, the attitude, was a pretty happy-go-lucky, let's make music and have fun attitude. And then we lost one of the founders of the chorale to AIDS, and suddenly it hit home because we began to realize that there were a huge number of HIV-positive men in the chorale. Just as an aside, from that time through today, we've lost an entire choir, 216 singers, not all to AIDS, but the vast majority to HIV and AIDS. And we memorialize those whom we've lost every holiday concert. It's very touching, something that we feel we have to remember because it's a part of our legacy, part of our heritage. But the impact was devastating. And the long-term effects over a period of 10 years were devastating. There was a period of time, I started singing in the chorale in 1983. There was a period of time between 83 and 1990 where you would go to rehearsal and sit next to someone and go home and get a call that we were singing at that person's memorial that weekend, and you'd go back to rehearsal the next week and the chair's empty. There were times when we were singing at 2 and 3 memorial services every week, and it was absolutely devastating, but it was the glue that held the chorale together for so many years. We were literally singing for our lives, and it is an indelible part of the chorale's history and the chorale's purpose. The chorale will always have I'm sure Sean will concur that the chorale will always have social justice at its core, because that's just the way we roll.
Mm-hmm. So the AIDS crisis subsided with the advent of new medications. You still lose an occasional member to HIV, but it's not the thing on the front page. It's not the thing that you're constantly thinking about.
It's
anymore.
Not the chorale's reason for being anymore.
Right.
It was the reason for being. We literally sang for our lives. We sang to say, we are here, we count for something, we have a message to deliver, we have healing to bring. And that was the very foundation.
And audiences went to see the chorale for that reason too, to be part of that.
They felt that emotion.
Yeah.
You still feel the emotion from the guys on stage. Mm-hmm. That's part of the chorale's magic. But they felt the emotion, and they felt the intensity of the importance of those who were ill and those who had gone on.
So after the AIDS crisis subsided, you didn't have that same purpose to stay together, and you lost a number of members, didn't you?
There was quite a bit of shrinkage, and it didn't have to do with just that. The longtime artistic director of the chorale, Tim Selig, who was there for 20 years, stepped down. Mm-hmm. And in any social or professional or business organization, when you have a long time leader, it's very difficult for the next person mm-hmm. who steps in, and sometimes impossible. And if you look at the history of corporations where you've seen this, you see that the first one, after a long time leader, stays about 2 or 3 years, and then the next one stays about 2 or 3 or 4 years, and then you reach a new equilibrium. Well, Sean's the new equilibrium. We've gone through two.
And who would have ever thought of calling Sean the same one?
Nobody has ever made that comparison before.
And at its low ebb, the chorale had dropped to well below 100 singers.
Mm-hmm. And you're over 200
more twice
now.
More than twice that now.
You know, I will say, though, I think during the 2000s, a lot of gay men's choruses especially were suffering an identity crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't the only one, and we've had to answer the questions along with our brother and sister choruses all over the country of who are we now? And whereas the AIDS crisis kind of remains our beating heart, like, what are we going to do now with our legs? And it took a while to figure that out. And I think we're still trying to answer those questions.
So part of the answer is your season this season is called Renegade.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that a little bit. Is that part of your social justice thing that you're doing now?
So it's funny. When I started 4 years ago, I really had no intention, to be honest with you, for the chorale to be a social justice organization. And it took me a while to get to the point that I realized that we not only could be a top-notch musical organization, but also have a voice in social matters along the way as well. And, you know, we sang for ourselves for so many years because we had to during the AIDS crisis, and we were our own choir. We sang to ourselves for our own church. I knew that to be viable and to sustain moving forward, we have to be willing to speak for other, to sing for other people, and that's what we're doing. We're using our voice to sing out and speak out for all kinds of needed social causes.
So how big of a role did the Fight for Marriage Equality play into that?
And, you know, it's funny. The chorus at the time really didn't have a whole lot to say about it. And I think there was a sense of, we knew it was going to happen one day, and then when it did happen, we would celebrate, and we celebrated it in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
There were plenty of organizations that were out there fighting the fight, and I think the choruses were just, we were ready to celebrate, and we did. You know, we were singing about marriage long before it was legal on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, what once we do now, it feels almost trite and just common sense, because this just feels like part of the fabric now of our country. And anytime we sing about it, we have to remind ourselves there's a piece that had a gay marriage line about Massachusetts, the sleigh ride we're singing this year, that has still had a line about Massachusetts in there when Massachusetts was the only state.
That's right.
And so we had to remind ourselves to take that line out because it just didn't make any sense now in our current context. So it definitely shaped us. But what we're finding is there are all kinds of other communities and causes and needs that benefit just as much from our voice as those just within the gay and lesbian community.
But that is part of, I mean, that's so much a part of who you are. And it seems like with the marriage equality fight, we got there. And then all of a sudden, now we're arguing about whether or not somebody should make a cake for us. That's going to the Supreme Court, I think, this week.
Yeah.
it's like 3, 10, 100 steps forward, and now we're taking steps back. Just the fact that we have to argue about making a dumb old cake.
But that's the course of history. It's always 2 steps forward, 1 step back, 2 steps forward, 1 step back. And nationally and politically, we've probably taken 10 steps backwards in this nation. We'll come out of it. We'll come forward from it. Mm-hmm. This will not last forever.
Oh, sure.
And we'll keep going. And it's the same with organizations and with their purpose, with their reason for being, same as with the Corral.
Okay, so you have something exciting coming up, and that's what all this is leading up to. You have something very exciting coming up. First of all, you've commissioned a piece called Peacekeepers, and that will be performed at your, is it February?
In the spring.
In your spring concert. And as it's that's the show called Anthem.
Correct.
Okay, now in June, you're going to go on a 4-city tour, just kind of in the area, neighboring states. Going to, where are you going?
So we're going to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Little Rock, Arkansas, and Shreveport, Louisiana. And you heard my Tulsa, Oklahoma accent. Arkansas, and Shreveport, Louisiana, and then back through to Tyler, Texas, and then back home.
And it's a 4-day tour?
Four days.
And what's the purpose, what's the gist of this whole thing?
I'll be honest, when the election happened, you know, last year, whenever it was, now it feels so long ago, you know, the Corral had to make a decision of who we were going to be in this time. We knew it was going to be a difficult time for a lot of people. And so we wanted to take our message on the road to places that we felt perhaps had different political, social views than we did. But we wanted to use our music to bridge those communities. And we specifically picked neighboring communities to ours because we felt like they were our friends and they would be much more receptive to a concert, a message such as this. And we had lots of connection between our members and people in those communities. So
right, so they're more likely to listen to it from Dallas than they are if the San Francisco Chorus were to do something like this.
And, you know, San Francisco Chorus, they went and did a big tour of the South not too long ago. Hugely important and very successful. We just went a different route, and we're keeping it close to home.
Okay, now, I don't know if you heard the news that happened last week in Tulsa, which kind of throws Tulsa off as, oh, well, maybe they're not so conservative.
I'm from Tulsa. That's my hometown.
I know you are. But there was a special election. Now, last year when they had elections for state senate, the Democratic Party in this one district in Tulsa, the Democratic Party threw $200,000 into this race. They thought that maybe we can win this race, and they lost it by 14 points. It was a nice, big, solid defeat. This year, that person has resigned, and there was a special election. It was just held last week. The person who won, a 26-year-old lesbian who got no backing from the party, what she did was she got her friends together, and they went block walking, and they knocked on doors, and they talked to people in the district, and she won by 31 votes, was it? Something like that. She needs to be at that concert.
Absolutely.
So
it's amazing what an authentic voice will do in all this craziness. And that's what we're hoping to be. It's just an authentic voice and sharing our stories with these communities.
One of the things you're going to be doing is Peacekeepers. This is a piece that you've commissioned.
Yep.
Tell us about Peacekeepers. What is it about, and how did this come together?
You know, when I sat down to think about what kind of musical message and what kind of musical statement we are going to make, every choir you ever see or in concert or hear, they always sing about peace. There are so many songs about peace, but I wanted to put some legs to that. And basically, I wanted to tell a story and challenge the listener of, okay, we can all speak about peace, but what are we going to actually do to create peace and keep peace? And so the idea of Peacekeepers came about. And the text around Peacekeepers is all about specific, actionable behavior that you can exhibit and keep peace and create peace in the world. It's not just this, you know, lovey-dovey kind of abstract idea of peace. These are the things you can do. You can speak up. You can take part in events that make your voices heard. It's very actionable, and that was the purpose of that piece.
Okay, so a lot of people who've been speaking up, they're not talking to their families right now. We've heard a lot of that. Speaking up how and where are you suggesting?
I would suggest that speaking up always for any voice that has been shuttered or any group of people that are on the outside. Mm-hmm. And I think the chorale does that really well. Is we speak to those on those outliers, people that are being shunned in one way or another, and we bring them into our family. And so I think that's where we start. And maybe that is a gay and lesbian person living in Louisiana, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's a homeless person, or maybe it's an immigrant, somebody that needs to hear those messages. And all of those themes exist in Peacekeepers.
How do you think that's going to go over in some of these communities?
Well, I mean, I think it'll go over well because, I mean, these are all universal beliefs, I think. I think we all really, in the end, want kindness for each other and want to understand each other better. You know, I come from a very conservative family, and I've never felt that nobody didn't care what I thought. I always felt that maybe I wasn't brave enough to speak, you know, what I thought, for out of fear. And so I think it'll go over very well. We're not going to any of these places to tell them what to believe. Mm-hmm. We're just sharing our story, and what they take away from that is really up to them. Mm-hmm. It's our experience that we're going to share.
Now you performed in Tyler, and you were with the chorale at that time.
I was.
You performed in Tyler. It was like 8 years ago,
something like that.
And the concert, I went along on that concert to report on it, and the concert was beautiful. It was a Christmas concert, but setting up that concert, things didn't go so well. Tell what happened.
Well, sure. We had been in negotiations with another church in Tyler to do the concert there. And everything was a go until about 3 days before the concert. And somehow a group of individuals in that particular congregation started to do their research and discovered that we were primarily a gay men's chorus. And unfortunately, the church felt the need to rescind that invitation. And First Presbyterian Church of Tyler, which is the church we'll be performing for in June, really came to the rescue. And so not only did we pack it out with First Presbyterian folks, but I was told, you know, a good majority of the folks from the other congregation came to the concert as well.
Well, I did hear, I was standing in the back, and I did hear somebody, as they were leaving, say, "I'm from that church, and I apologize. We're not like that."
We had a receiving line of some of our singers in the back after we finished the concert, and just person after person would express that, you know, that's not what we believe, and this needed to be at our church. But you know, since then we've all made amends. We're all friends again. But we're going back to First Presbyterian. We haven't forgotten.
Oh, it's a lovely church.
Yeah,
it was just a lovely place.
That's good. Yeah. I do remember the story, and I just thought, how did they not know?
Because they're the Turtle Creek Chorale. They're not the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, the Los Angeles Gay Men's Chorus,
that's
the
DC. That's a whole other show.
That is another. That's an hour-long conversation in itself.
But one of the things that they said when they were founding the chorale was the Turtle Creek Chorale can perform with some of the Baptist churches here in town and their choirs. They can perform down at the Meyerson. They can perform. Whereas the Dallas Gay Men's Chorus,
it was a little more altruistic than that. It was survival. Mm-hmm. The guys who founded the chorale actually toyed with calling it the Dallas Gay Men's Chorus. Mm-hmm. And they said, we will be able to sing free in a park maybe twice, and then we'll be out of existence. Mm-hmm. It was a conscious decision to make the focus initially be the music. There was a legend in the chorale and a legend in the gay and lesbian community in Dallas by the name of John Thomas. John was one of the founding members of the chorale. John was a good friend. He and I used to sit over coffee and have arguments about the purpose, the meaning, and the inception of the chorale. And with apologies to Marshall McLuhan, there's nobody else in this room old enough to remember who he is, but with apologies to Marshall McLuhan, I said, John, the music is the message. And he would shake his head and say, you're wrong. The lifestyle is the message. And the music comes from the lifestyle. The feeling, the intensity comes from the lifestyle. And I don't think either of us were wrong, and I don't think either of us were 100% right. It's mm-hmm. both. The music is a huge element of the message, right. But the music is so intense because of the what's behind it and the people making it.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis. And our guests are Sean Baugh and Bruce Jaster from the Turtle Creek Chorale. We'll be back with more right after this.
This is Janice McCall from TCU, and I listen to Lambda Week on 89.3 KNON FM, Dallas.
And this is Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with Laurent Landis. The late Patty Fink will join us next week. Our guests are from the Turtle Creek Chorale, and we just heard Chorale is performing with the Richardson Symphony. Do you want to talk just a little bit about what that is?
Sure. Last year, the Richardson Symphony, great regional orchestra here, invited us to headline their Christmas concert. And so next Saturday, this coming Saturday, December 2nd, I believe, we will be performing with them at the Eisman Center in Richardson. Really excited about it.
Mm-hmm. Real nice.
And doing Christmas music
A variety of Christmas music, and the orchestra, of course, will play some of their repertoire as well. But what we'll be singing is mostly music from our upcoming holiday series down here.
Oh, looking forward to that. Before the break, we were talking about, I guess, kind of like the history of how the Turtle Creek Chorale came, the name came to be, instead of the Dallas Gay Men's Chorus or Dallas Gay Chorale. So because it is the Turtle Creek Chorale, are you all welcoming or open to straight male singers?
Oh, gosh, yes.
So we have probably the largest number of men who don't identify as gay singing in the chorus as we've ever had in our history.
Awesome.
And I would actually, I hope nobody else is listening, but I would actually venture to say we're probably we have the most straight members than any other gay men's chorus in the country.
That's awesome.
And so that's why I'm always hesitant to call ourselves a gay chorus, because right. We're not really, and that's to ignore a huge and important part of our family. We are a chorus primarily of gay men. With our friends.
Gotcha. And how do they end up joining the chorale? I mean, I know they come, they audition like anybody else.
They audition, and we check their straightness.
Okay.
They have to bring a note from their doctor.
Please, Sean.
Are there
this is on the air.
Yes, we check and sit on the gay card.
Right.
No.
Seriously. They generally come to the chorale because they hear the chorale. They hear the chorale, or they hear of the chorale, and they realize, I haven't found the kind of chorus that I want to sing in, but this is one that really does attract me, and they come and they audition and they find a very welcoming home. I mean,
and the fact that you do all show tunes doesn't give them a clue.
If you look at the other men's choruses that are out there, the really only other one in Dallas is Vocal Majority, mm-hmm. and theirs is a barbershop specialty. Mm-hmm. And not everybody wants to do barbershop 12 months out mm-hmm. of the year. So the chorale has a very diverse mm-hmm. Repertoire from serious to kitsch, and it's a lot of fun. You go beyond that, and there are small choruses in the arts district or church choirs, and then it's the outlet is just not the same.
But as far as how a number of them get there, I know a couple of the straight guys who've been in the chorale and are not in the chorale now, but they got there actually because a friend of theirs was gay, was singing in the chorale, and
invited
they brought him along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they were hooked.
Yeah.
Wow. I check on them every once in a while. You know, I'm especially the new folks who join who happen to be straight, and I'm like, well, what are you taking away from this? And oftentimes their response is, well, I'm learning a lot of things I didn't know, and I'm having an incredible time. I found a family here.
That's awesome.
It's really great.
So it should be. So you said to join, you have to audition.
Sure.
And before the show, Bruce told me that there isn't a limit on the members. How many people can join? So does that mean you're always auditioning?
We audition twice a season.
Okay.
Since we're on the subject, we have auditions coming up in January.
Awesome.
And if you're interested in singing with Turtle Creek Chorale, you can check out turtlecreekchorale.org, and there's a sign up for him there that you can come in.
Turtlecreekchorale.com.
Sorry, turtlecreekchorale.com. That's right. So twice a year we will audition new members, and we haven't gotten to that point to where it's an unwieldy choir. We're pretty big, but we haven't gotten to the point where I don't feel like that we're out of control. If we ever get to that point, we might look at limiting some numbers. But you know, we never have in the past, and I can't imagine we'll be doing so.
I would think what would limit you is how many people you can fit on that stage.
And we're getting close to that. But there, you know, there's a sound issue. There's a musical issue. The more people you have, you know, the less clarity you have if you want to get into all this musicality. But it becomes, there's a turning point where it just becomes this monstrosity rather than a really gentle and intricate musical ensemble. Mm-hmm.
So just show up and I'll go to turtlecreekchorale.com and fill out the form to audition. Any pre-qualifications that they need, just other than you know, I need to carry a tune.
You need to be able to carry a tune, and you need
see,
to fit.
Laurent,
we're totally
we're
out.
Sorry. I think we established that with David though a long time ago. No, I mean there's an audition process. You learn a little piece of music that we give you, but a lot of people think that most of the members have grown up singing, or perhaps they studied singing in school. I would say that maybe half of our singers actually read music, and the other half do not, and people are shocked whenever they hear that. Some of our singers have never been in a choir in their entire lives.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so we have all ranges. We have people that teach choir and music for a living, all the way to people this is their very first choir that they've ever been in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I want to go back to your name for just a second. All the other gay men's choruses are the so-and-so gay men's chorus.
No, they are not. All of the other gay men's choruses in the U.S. are probably 50-50.
Oh, okay.
With gay in the name and gay not in the name.
All I was going to say was, and ours is the Turtle Creek Chorale, that's a pretty name.
Well, there's Windy City.
Oh, that's true.
In Chicago, and there's Portland. Men's Chorus, I think, is their full name. There are quite a few that don't have the gay in the name, though the pressure from the founding members of GALA was very great to make sure that that was part of the public image. Hence the chorale coming under an awful lot of negativism at the beginning from the other choruses. But we've grown out of that.
My whole point was when you take out the political pressure to make it, you know, we want to be more radical, so we're going to be the Dallas Gay Men's Chorus, and we're going to be, and you just the name of it, we're going to see the Turtle Creek Chorale. Oh, how nice. It's a nice name.
It sounds nice.
Yeah.
So we have a mixed company as far as gay men who don't identify as gay, straight men, et cetera, et cetera. Do any of these other chorales around the city, around the country, include women?
There are some choruses around the country that do have women.
Awesome.
And, we've come up against that a few times, and there's going to be a point in time that we're going to have to look at broadening our reach in that way. But there are some, as long as the women can carry the men's parts, and can sing in that range. I know some choruses have had no problem with it at all.
One of the things that you've, two other things that you're doing, you're kicking off your friendship tour, and the friendship tour is going to be, it starts on June 16th. You're going to Tulsa, Little Rock, Shreveport, and Tyler to perform in, shall we call them, more conservative areas mm-hmm. than we are in Oaklawn.
That would be fair.
Would that be fair?
That would be mm-hmm. fair.
Okay.
The kickoff concert, but the kickoff concert is on June the 16th. Mm-hmm. The actual tour begins June 21, I think. Is that correct?
Oh, okay.
21, 22.
Yeah, you're not yes. leaving from there. You're leaving the next week.
No, right. we're doing the kickoff concert mm-hmm. on a Saturday night mm-hmm. Here in Dallas. And then the tour actually begins later that week, on Thursday of that week.
Okay, but tell us about the kickoff.
The kickoff concert will be produced in conjunction with Temple Shalom. It will be held in the synagogue mm-hmm. Of Temple Shalom at Hillcrest and Alpha. They have an intense amount of excitement that is surrounding them being the host for the chorale for this kickoff concert. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be an extravaganza in terms of promotion by the committee that they're putting together to do it. They're not going to let anybody in this city not be aware that the chorale is doing a kickoff concert in their temple on that Saturday.
How did this partnership start?
The chorale has had a lot of involvement with the Jewish community with a prior artistic director, with Jonathan Plant. And that had kind of, when Jonathan left, that kind of got stale. We have always had elements of the Jewish community that have followed the chorale and loved the music. Mm-hmm. It just so happens that a gentleman that I worked for, and a gentleman who was a client of mine for a number of years, is the incoming president of the congregation at mm-hmm. Temple Shalom. And we started talking after one of the prior Turtle Creek Chorale concerts about what could we do in conjunction, in a production arrangement or a production cooperation with Temple Shalom, and this is what came about. And they're very enthusiastic about it, and so are we.
It doesn't this kind of work into that whole social justice thing?
It does. It does, frankly.
Tell us about
Well, Temple Shalom is a very progressive congregation, and they are looking for things that will put them more or less on a cutting edge, mm-hmm. primarily in the arts. And we just happen to be two ships sailing in the same ocean, and we're going to join forces.
The other event that I was talking about, the National AIDS Nurses Association,
mm-hmm, sure.
And you performed for them, or will perform for them?
We performed for them a couple of weeks ago during their memorial service.
And tell me about this group. I don't know anything about this group.
So the organization is a national association, and they were celebrating, I think, their 30th anniversary.
I believe that's right.
30th anniversary this year with a conference in Dallas, and we helped them close out their conference. And I mean, it was really, truly an unbelievable experience to sing some of our songs of healing for these people that help people heal for so many years. So they were in tears. We were in tears. It's just one of those small little opportunities that you never know how affected you will be by it. And that was a beautiful afternoon spending with them.
One of their very active members of the AIDS Nurses Association is the head nurse at AIDS Services of Dallas. And she was, I believe, a co-chair of this conference. And I'm on the board of ASD, on the board of AIDS Services of Dallas. So we started talking, and they came to us through the staff at ASD mm-hmm. asking if we could do something. Sean was very enthusiastic about singing for this group, mm-hmm. and it turned into quite a wonderful experience for everybody.
Well, like you said, for a group that spent so many years healing each other, mm-hmm. to be able to do that for another group is a wonderful thing to be able to do.
Absolutely.
This week is World AIDS Day. December 1st is World AIDS Day.
We'll be singing at Cathedral of Hope on Wednesday evening at 7:15.
Okay, good. We'd still have a couple of minutes. Renegade is your upcoming season. Mm-hmm. Your Christmas concert is?
Holiday concert.
I'm sorry. I'm no.
Come
wait,
on,
wait,
David.
Wait. Our president said we're going to call it Christmas this year.
Okay.
And if my president has said something like that.
Is he your president?
I was going to say, now you're following his lead.
I said yes.
Okay.
We do. We start next week. And, you know, Thanksgiving fell a little later this year. And so now we're in absolute panic mode. Mm-hmm. It's here. And nobody knew it was going to be here this quickly. And we're not happy about it.
So the concert is when?
So the concert is next week on Thursday. We start on December the 7th.
Seven runs all the way through.
7 through 10, December 7 through 10.
And
7th, 8th, and 9th is an evening, and Sunday the 10th is an afternoon matinee.
And I heard Turtle Creek Chorale, Richardson Symphony. I wasn't listening because I was doing my paperwork here. What is that?
So that is December 2nd with the Richardson Symphony at the Eisman Center. And you'll get a little miniaturized version of our concert that we'll do at Moody Performance Hall the following week.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. If anybody wants tickets, you can get them at turtlecreekcorral.com.
Correct.
And if they would like season tickets so that they can go to your spring concert and summer concert, tell us again what those are.
Here's a plug. The season tickets actually are priced so that you get three concerts for the price of two. So Christmas can be free. If you sign up for a season subscription, you get to choose your seats. You get benefits about changing concert nights at no charge and all of that. And that is available on the website as well, turtlecreekchorale.com. Mm-hmm. Season tickets will no longer be on sale after this holiday concert starts. So you'd have to do that between now and December the 6th. To be able to take advantage
of
that.
So you can either get two concerts for the price...
You get three concerts for the price of two.
Or
it's a 30% discount.
If you miss this one, it's two concerts for the price of two.
Well, and then you're still saving money over the regular concert price.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to your concert. It's something that I always do enjoy. And there it goes. This is KNON. We don't always expect things to be working here. Thank you so much for being here. I'm looking forward to the concerts. And
I'll see you there. So I'm going to bring my kid for the first time this year.
Oh, great.
Good.
Wonderful.
And have a happy holiday.
Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas. I'm confused which I'm supposed to say. We'll see you next week. Our guest next week is Julie Johnson. She is running for... State House of Representatives against Matt Rinaldi, who wrote the bathroom bill.